Produced by Jeffrey Griselius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller, this is Yes Music Podcast episode 615. Yes Ephemera, Print and Digital.
Hi, this is Trevor Rabin and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
Welcome to episode 615 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kay, will be along in a few minutes' time. You can always get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I had a great conversation about Yes Ephemera. What do I mean by that? Well, it's stuff that would certainly have disappeared if it wasn't for people like Steve Sullivan, Pete Whipple, and Jeffrey Mason over at forgotten-yesterdays.com, who collect and share all sorts of items on that amazing site. As on other occasions, it's best if you take a look at the images on the show notes for this episode at yesmusicpodcast.com, either as you listen or afterwards, because everything will make a lot more sense. Assuming Mark and I actually do make sense, of course. We chose three concert or related items to talk about each, and then I threw in a somewhat unusual item I've just received, which is certainly ephemeral. I don't know how many of them still exist. As always, Mark and I will be fascinated to hear your views on this week's items via comments on the show notes. On the YMP Facebook discussion group this week, it's been another busy time, Doug Curran's haul this time included. Photos from the NAMM show in Anaheim, featuring Jeff Downes and Dave Kirtner, ex-Asia man John Payne with Pat Mraz, beside Pat's original Mini Moog, as used with Yes, and Jordan Rudess, with Mraz as well. Ultimate Classic Rock's article on John Anderson being open to a Yes reunion. I won't hold my breath. The New Record Collector magazine, featuring Geddy Lee talking about Yes and his new book. The New Prog magazine with a Trevor Horn article or interview. And Best Guitarist 2023 Reader's Poll Results in Prog magazine with Trevor Rabin at number 4 and Steve Howe at number 9. Just a note to say at this point, if you see any comments on the YMP Facebook group that you aren't happy with, for example, unfriendly or abusive ones, please do report them. My policy is to delete anything I agree is unworthy of the spirit of the group and YMP without any discussion. The aforementioned Jeffrey Mason also contributed a great list this week, including a poster from 1969 featuring The Nice and Yes, the new collector's edition red marble vinyl from Cleopatra Records, Two Sides of Peter Banks, a Ryan Reed compiled new ranking of every Yes song for Ultimate Classic Rock, an article from 1983 including news of a new album by the proto-Yes band Cinema, a photo of Chris Squire and Rick Wakeman performing with Yes at Madison Square Garden, New York City, during their Tales from Topographic Oceans tour in February 1974, a Rick Wakeman signed poster for the Straubs, a 1972 poster for a Yes concert played at the Starlight Room at the historic Gilderdrome Boston, UK, on a short European tour, Happy National Lego Day with a Tormato cover themed set, a photo from the Tormato in Montreal, a lot of interviews and articles from Beat Instrumental magazine in the mid-late 70s, Steve Howe, John Anderson, Rick Wakeman, Alan White, Chris Squire, an article from Dan Hedges in June 1976 when he joined them on the first US leg of their solo albums tour, and a 1976 interview with Patrick Mraz about his The Story of I album. Wow, what a list. Stephen Schinder shared the latest Yes Shift episode, try saying that after a couple of beers, which is one of their news desk editions, and Paul Raybould also got to meet Patrick Mraz at NAMM and play that Yes Mini Moog. John Pickles shows off his mint copy of Yes Time and a Word, which is beautiful, and Rasmus Heider attended a Q&A session with Mraz at NAMM. Nicholas Moyart found a copy of Homeworld, the computer game, at a charity shop. It features music from Yes's 1999 The Ladder album, and Adrian Bell shared the latest episode of his progressive alternative show, featuring Rick Wakeman and a lot of other things. H.B. Peterson added what he calls another cool article from Stephen Lamb. It's about six songs that didn't make it onto 90125. Brian Sullivan posted the South Side of the Sky cover by a Bulgarian group. It's rather good. And Charlie Nolan spotted the Alan White Beat Instrumental 1970, or is it 71, report on the band Balls' new single called Fight for My Country, of which band Alan White was briefly a member as well as a later 1976 interview with the drummer. As always, many thanks to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, including the fabulous comments on last week's show notes from Peter Saint-André, Greg Clinton, Guy Jerome, Steve Schulman, Tim Stannard and Dave Owen. Do go and read those. They're great.
Yes Music Podcast, 12 True Summers.
Back this week with Mark, and here he is. Hello, Mark.
Hey there, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Much, much better, thank you very much. What about yourself?
Doing pretty good. It's very mild here. We're having a really mild winter. I'm so happy about this. It feels like we're living in Vancouver or possibly your end of the country here because it's no snow now, and it's really a little bit rainy, cloudy, but it's nice. I'd rather take this than 10 feet of snow.
Excellent. Okay, well, we've got pretty quiet weather at the moment. That's very important always, of course, to talk about the weather yes. When we first start. Excellent. Well, it's quite cold, but very quiet. So what we thought we would do this week is mine the amazing Forgotten Yesterday's website once again and have a look at some of the, what I've called, ephemera. And that's the things which, if wonderful people like Jeffrey Mason and the other guys who are in charge of Forgotten Yesterdays didn't collect and make available via the internet, then their ephemeral day would just disappear and we wouldn't know anything about these amazing artifacts of Yes, the greatest progressive rock band in the world. So I'm very, very delighted that we have these collections on this site. And so what we've done is chosen, not at random, but we've chosen three items from memorabilia on Forgotten Yesterdays across the whole career of Yes, it turns out. So we're just going to have a chat about those today, see which ones we've chosen. I think we've gone for posters and adverts and flyers of various Yes concerts. So it'll be interesting to see why we've gone for these particular ones. Let's start off with Mark for a change. You usually start off with me, so let's go with Mark first. What's your first pick today?
Well, the first, and let me just preface this by saying that all of these ones have I selected mainly because they were either something I would love to attend or maybe something that I did attend or, you know what I mean? Something that has some sort of a strong connection to me. And the first one I picked is a really interesting ad for a concert at the Anaheim Stadium in 1976. So this would have been the solo tour, I believe.
Yes.
Patrick Mraz is still with the band at this point. And they're, you know, Anaheim Stadium is a gigantic place. Very, very big. I mean, I think that you're talking like 50, 60,000 people can sit in this place. And so this is obviously at the peak of Yes's popularity in America, at least at this time. And the ad is fantastic, I thought. The British are coming, it says on there. And then you have a picture of Yes on there with the five at the time, which is, you know, like I said, Patrick Mraz, Chris Squire, Alan White, John, and Steve.
Yep.
But they were co-headlining, apparently, this with a very popular Peter Frampton.
That's right.
At the time.
Yes,
So that wasn't really the reason why I chose it because of Peter Frampton. The reason why I chose it because something immediately caught my eye, and I thought to myself, man, if I was, you know, I was only like all of 3 years old at the time when this happened.
Yes.
But if I was of age to be able to go to a concert like this, I would have gave my left nut to go to this, which was, it has also Gary Wright on here, which was, you know, Dreamweaver, that guy. But the main thing why I wanted to also go is because it has one of my other favorite bands of all time, Gentle Giant, on here.
Goodness
and I thought to myself, wow, could you imagine going to a show with Yes and Gentle Giant on it? I mean, that would have been like Prague Overload, you know, that would have been like your head would have exploded when the show was done.
Yeah, it does look like an amazing event, doesn't it? And it's interesting that a couple of the ones that we've chosen have featured multiple bands. And yes, you're right. I mean, Peter, I can't say I'm a massive Peter Frampton fan. I did recently watch his part of the the JFK Stadium. So that was the same tour, wasn't it? So Peter Frampton and Yes played the JFK Stadium, and I don't think it exists anymore. I think it was bulldozed, wasn't it, that stadium? But that was one of those aerial photographs that they took of these, I don't know how many it was, 100,000 or something that came along to see Yes and Peter Frampton that time. So what do you know about Gentle Giant then? I mean, you know a lot more than I do about Gentle Giant. In 1976, what kind of phase were they in? Were they at the height of their popularity, or were they never as popular as Yes or Peter Frampton?
Well, I don't think they were ever as popular as them at that time. Well, I don't think at any time were Gentle Giant that big, but to me that didn't really matter. I mean, I loved their music from day one. At this point, they had an album out called Interview, and most people would say, and I think I wouldn't get too much argument from people who like Gentle Giant as well, that wasn't exactly their, you know, best album or most popular album at the time. You know, the records that you want to get if you're really into it is like Octopus, and you want to get albums like you know, some of their earlier ones, like the debut is good, or Three Friends is really good as well.
Okay.
So the point is, they were really one of these fantastic bands that, you know, 1 minute they're playing, you know, like a normal five piece, you know, keyboards, guitar, bass, and all of a sudden the keyboard player and bass player will stop within like a bar, drop their guitars, pick up a violin, the other guy will pick up a cello, and all of a sudden they're playing that, or the drummer will run over to a xylophone all of a sudden. Like, it's they're one of those bands where it's like a Frank Zappa ensemble group, but just with five people, you know. They're just running all over the place to different instruments while the song is running, you know. So it's fascinating to watch, and I really love their songs. I mean, their first five or six albums are like near perfect, in my opinion.
Excellent. Well, not someone I've got into yet, so that's yet another.
I would suggest you check it out.
Yes, another thing I need to check out, absolutely. The other thing I should have said at the top of this episode, which I always forget to say, do go to the show notes for this episode to see all these things that we're talking about. I mean, you can hear us going on about them, but to see them as well is very important. And the other thing I like about this advert is, and it was interestingly in the Los Angeles Times this comes from, and their sort of calendar section, I believe it says on the right of this image, that not only did you have Peter Frampton, Yes, Gary Wright, Gentle Giant, you also had circus acts, stunts, and much more. So it must have been quite a full day of excitement going to this event. I wonder if there's anybody listening who did go to this event. If you did, then do let us know. That would be fantastic to hear. Okay, well, that's amazing. The British are coming over to the US. Well, my first one, the British are staying very much at home in mindset. Mine is from the 31st of July 1971, so going back even further than yours. And this is the Crystal Palace Bowl Garden Party 2. And this is a very important place for Yes, this Crystal Palace Bowl. Again, I think it does still exist, but it's certainly not in the same form that it was in those days. There was famously a lake in front of the stage there, and there were floating inflatable dinosaurs and things at various stages. I seem to remember Rick Wakeman doing those sorts of things, as you can imagine. But yes, an open air venue like the one we've just talked about in Anaheim, that was an open air venue as well. Yeah. And this was when Yes were still with their original logo. So we're talking about the Yes album, those times. So we still had Bill Bruford on drums. And we'd not very long time before this, Steve Howe had joined on guitar. And that means that on this wonderful colour photograph of this colour poster, you have Yes with their original logo at the bottom of this garden party selection of acts. Now, the headlining act at this time was Elton John. And he seems to be Dee Murray and Nigel Olsen. I'm assuming those were his support acts, I think. And then you've got a section of with special guests, Fairport Convention, the folk rock outfit, very successful in those days. Rory Gallagher, amazing guitarist, I think I'm right in saying. And Yes, right down at the bottom official program costing 15 pence, which is quite, quite different from the lavish productions that the Gottlieb brothers do nowadays. And you've also got two other bands. So again, this must have been a full day of excitement at the garden party, the second one ever. Two other bands, Hookfoot, I don't think I've ever heard of Hookfoot, and Tiernanog, which I believe is an Irish legendary land. And I have heard of them. I've seen their names on various posters over the years, but I know nothing about that band either. And that was one of the things I was going to say, that perhaps in the future, Mark, we might do an episode or two where we listen to all the different bands on a particular program at an event and get some kind of a flavour of of what that concert was like.
That'd be an excellent idea.
Yeah, and the other nice thing about this particular event in July 71 is that quite a number of these songs, if not the whole concert, is available to listen to. And interestingly, according to Forgotten Yesterdays, this was 52 years, 6 months and 1 day ago
that this took place.
And the set list was also Sprach Zarathustra, which is one of the three main introductory classical music that they used to use. And you can tell that this was very close to the release of the Yes album, because we've got Yours Is No Disgrace, I've Seen All Good People. Then some of the older ones, America, Clap, so Steve stood up and played that. Classical Gas, he also played. And then back into Perpetual Change, and finally It's Love. And as I say, most, if not all of that, is on The Word Is Live. So you can go back and hear it. And it's actually, I listened to it today, it's a very, very clear and very good recording of this event. And I'm not going to go on too much longer, because I did get a bit excited about this event, because this is the same venue where a couple of years later, where they took part in the Garden Party 5, and our friend and listener Ken Fuller was at that concert, and that's where they premiered Close to the Edge. The first time they ever played it was at this same venue. But of course, this time, Yes, we're very much the headline act and had various bands supporting them. But that's not what we're talking about this time. I just wanted to say, though, finally, about this beautiful poster and amazing, it must have been an amazing event, was that the last song they played, It's Love. And again, I've heard this before, but I listened to it today and it's absolutely amazing. That, according to Forgotten Yesterdays, they only played this song, which was a cover by the song by the Young Rascals. Again, not a band that I know a lot about. It's Love. It's absolutely amazing performance, and it's one of those ones that they did in those days, like America, which is very long. It's an 11-minute workout and work through this piece, and it's got the most amazing Chris Squire bass solo, which goes on for, I don't know, 5 minutes or something of this 11 minutes is his solo. Incredibly fast, incredibly long. It sounds a bit improvised sounding, this solo, with just Bill Bruford accompanying. And, you know, I think that combination of Bruford and Squire, because it was just so long ago, is mainly forgotten by us Yes fans. We think of the White Squire duo, which was amazing and spectacular and just wonderful. But there was also before that these sorts of events where Bruford improvised his drumming behind the remarkable improvisation of Squire, and very different to the solos that Squire did after that. This is much more of a jazzy performance where he accompanies himself on the bass guitar and also does sort of almost jazz scat singing over the top of it. It's an absolutely staggering performance, and if you haven't heard that recently, you must go back and hear it now. So it's remarkable that last on the bill, they managed to produce this kind of event. And very shortly after this, of course, they weren't going to be last on the bill. They would be headlining. So, yeah, an amazing event to have been at.
Yeah, so a couple of things here that I just want to add to it, because number one, I thought this was a very interesting concert. Obviously, I mean, Elton John being the headliner, and you're kind of correct, the Dee Murray and Nigel Olsen, the reason why they're mentioned in this is because at this point, Elton John was touring as a three-piece, him on piano, Dee Murray on bass, Nigel Olsen on drums. And they were, he was giving them full sort of, you know, respect as far as giving them, you know, space on the advert as well, because they were a large part of the sound at that time. And a lot of people actually say that this was Elton John's, you know, real creative phase of his career when they were just like a three-piece like this, when they were doing Rocket Man and stuff like that, right? Fairpoint Convention is something, as a band I'm not too familiar with, and Rory Gallagher, I mean, obviously, you know, he's a guitar player extraordinaire. Yeah. Everybody knows him. But the interesting thing when you talk about the set list that Yes did, it's funny because when you listen to the recording that they have on The Word Is Live, I believe John Anderson prefaces It's Love saying, we have only time for a short one now for you.
Yes, when they started 11 minutes.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is the Young Rascals, that song in its original form was on a record called Grooving, which came out July 31st, 67. Mm. And its original version is only 3 minutes and 15 seconds long. So how they ended up making it into like a 15-minute epic is unbelievable, because, you know, obviously the bass solo and all that other stuff that they tagged onto it turned it into that, because the original version is not like that at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they were a pretty popular band. You know, Felix Cavallari was a well-known musician. He ended up, I think, later on becoming a producer, I think, later on, I believe, and later on in his career. But, yeah, they were very popular. I think their debut record even went gold, the 500,000 albums sold. So they were a pretty well-known band at the time, so it's not a surprise that, you know, Chris Squire and those guys would have been hooked on that kind of music and took it and did their very interesting modifications to the song to turn it into a Yes song.
Absolutely. And another point, just the last point on this, that's listen out for the how soloing and some of the how playing throughout that song, actually. And you can see a kind of bridge between Peter Banks's style and Steve Howe's sort of emerging Yes style on his guitar work there, I think. Really fascinating. All right, well, we better move on, because otherwise we're going to be here for hours, as always. And two amazing posters to start with. But what's your second pick then, Mark?
So my second pick is a poster again. But this one is one of these ones where I was like, again, if I was able to go attend this, I would have been, you know, in my element, I would have been so happy. And that was the poster for the Masterworks tour. I believe that this poster was what's kind of viewed as like a general poster, which they made and just put them up in various locations. Because if you look at it, a lot of the times they didn't have dates on them. They would just leave a space at the bottom and promoters would hand write in, like, you know, Toronto's, you know, 6th of December.
Yeah. Yes.
And it just mainly has the new emblem, because they were touring The Ladder at this point, apparently. Mm-hmm. It says, now in stores, The Ladder. It's like a little picture of it on there. Mm. And the special guest for the tour, which would have been really interesting, was Kansas.
Yeah,
they were the ones who were opening for Yes at this time. And Yes and Kansas go really well together. I mean, they're both known as progressive artists.
Yes.
So, of course, I think at this point, Yes were still viewed as more progressive. I think Kansas started having a little bit more, you know, non-progressive elements developing in their music at this time. Not, you know, they're not a pop band, but, you know, it just what they weren't as hardcore as Yes still was at this time in their career. But still, I would have loved to have attended this show, mainly because my second favorite keyboard player of all time, Mr. Igor Korishev, would have been front and center at this point on this tour. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I mean, Igor is the only man who's able to play all the prior keyboard players in Yes flawlessly. Yeah. Nobody else has ever been able to do that as well as Igor, so it's a shame that he never had a longer tenure in his band. So if I could go back in my TARDIS and appear at a concert, this would be one I would definitely go to see. Multiple dates at that as well, I would probably go see.
Yes, absolutely. And the links between Kansas and Yes, even stronger nowadays, because, of course, Tom Brislin is the keyboard player in Kansas. Yes. And apparently, I've not heard it yet, but I must make a point of listening to it. The latest album, quite a bit of it, created, written, and performed by Tom. So, those are very, as you say, the two bands go together extremely well, even today. And that was an amazing tour, which didn't come to the UK. Unfortunately, I would have gone to see it. I'd seen the Ladder tour quite shortly before that, and Open Your Eyes before that. But they did a lot of, as the name suggests, a Masterworks tour. They did a lot of pieces they'd not done for many years, or certainly not together for many years, a lot of the epic songs of Yes. All right then, brilliant. That's nice to have a very different era of the band there. And I'm jumping back in time with my second pick, which is back to 1984, where, of course, Yes are live in concert around the world. But I was always fascinated by, I've got a program, I didn't go to those, it was before my time of going to Yes concerts, I didn't go to the 90125 tour at all. But I was always fascinated by seeing in the program this, the fact that they were supported and sponsored by Spark-O-Matic Car Sound. Now, Spark-O-Matic is a name we've never had in the UK to my knowledge at all. So I was always thinking, Spark-O-Matic, what? It didn't even say Car Sound in the advert that I saw. Why would I thought there were spark plugs or something. You know, why would a car part a company be interested in sponsoring Yes as they went around on their world tour? And what I found on Forgotten Yesterdays is an advert for Sound Pro, the stereo leader, which takes us back into the 1984 era of sound in your car. And yes, Spark-O-Matic turn out to be, as you probably know, if you're on that side of the Atlantic, car sound specialists. So they created various different items for playing sound in your car. And I was fascinated because the US and perhaps Canada as well, as we've spoken about before, in the mid to late 70s or early through the 70s, car sound systems were often cartridges, were often 8-track cartridges. But this in 1984, now we're moving on to... Let me just tell you what these little devices are that they've got on this. Electronically tuned AM/FM stereo with auto reverse cassettes. Gosh, it sounds very up to date, doesn't it?
Yes.
Programmable memory of 5 AM and 5 FM stations. Audio power 45 watts. But the thing that struck me about this is that these systems that they're advertising for your car, they sound very expensive. Now, in 1984, $239 US dollars for a stereo for your car, that was a lot of money, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't cheap, I can tell you that. I remember vividly seeing this name, Spark-O-Matic, and I remember we used to always kind of chuckle about it because Spark-O-Matic wasn't exactly I simply must get a Spark-O-Matic stereo for my car. Right. It was more like Alpine was the kind of car stereo system if you wanted to get and stuff like that. But they were really pushing the Spark-O-Matic system back in the day. And I remember seeing a few people's cars having it in these Spark-O-Matic speakers. And let me tell you, these Spark-O-Matic car speakers, they were terrible. They didn't enhance your sound system at all. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh because you got to remember I hung around with a few guys that were like car aficionado guys. Like this guy I knew, he had a 1973 Camaro with a 454 engine in it that was like borderline street legal. Like police would always pull him over because when he would stop at the stop sign.
Right.
It would rumble and shake like, blah, 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 blah. They were like, I don't know if this is legal, son, to drive this. But he had a much better stereo system in his car. So we were always kind of like, we always had that advantage. We were spoiled, right?
Yeah.
And I remember we went into one of my other friend's cars. And he's like really proud of his Spark-O-Matic system. And it was like, he turned it on and we were like, oh, it sounded so terrible. But, getting back to the whole thing with your... ad here, it's definitely not cheap because I think they were relatively new at this point, this company, right? And that's always the way it is. But when you sent this ad over, I was just laughing at it. This is fantastic. Like Spark-O-Matic Car Sound presents Yes World Tour 84. Relive your in-concert performance in your car. Like, really? Yes. Like, you really think that this Okay, I'm going to go overboard if I don't stop myself.
Yes. It's brilliant, though. Yes, I agree. And the other things they've got on this advert, an 80-watt electronic graphic equalizer booster, apparently, and 449 for this full three-way stereo speaker set. It certainly does sound very expensive. And I'll just read out the other bits which are Yes-related. Sound Pro, that's the company selling these, is happy to welcome Yes and Sparkomatic to Rapid City. As you say, relive the in-concert experience of Yes in your car. And then down at the bottom, they've also got an amazing competition that you can enter. Register at Sound Pro to win Yes concert tickets, backstage passes, and Yes t-shirts. That's a significant prize, isn't it? I mean, it just shows you how much Sparkomatic, I think, we're putting into this. How much in cash they were putting in, because the backstage passes are gold dust, aren't they?
Yeah. Just to let you know, though, just for we kind of touched on this really quickly. I quickly went over to the inflation calculator.
Oh, right.
And apparently $500 in 1984 is equivalent to $1,304 in 2021. So
that's a serious amount of money.
It's a lot of money for a car stereo back then.
It's particularly if you say that it wasn't perhaps the best quality. Oh, fascinating.
There was no Alpine.
That's great that going back to 84 and seeing that archive advert on ForgottenYesterdays.com. Wonderful. Well, come on then. Let's have your next one, your third and final one, Mark.
Yes. But I mean, I got to tell you just one last thing, and I'll quickly go to mine here. Is in reflecting on your one here, that also has to show you, though, how popular Yes were at the time.
Oh,
not many car companies would start, supporting rock bands.
That's true.
At that time. So that just shows you how popular Yes were.
Yeah.
Okay, so getting to my last one is one that I immediately hunted down because I knew I wanted to have this one represented, and that is the Royal Affair Tour. June 24th, I was at this show on the Royal Affair Tour, which of course had Yes, Asia, John Lodge, and the Carl Palmer ELP Legacy, with special guest Arthur Brown on vocals.
Well, there you are. I mean, that's the, I suppose, much more modern equivalent of some of those concerts we've been talking about previously today.
Yeah, exactly. And this was a great show. I really enjoyed it. It was the show that, if you remember back to a podcast that we did right after this concert happened, I mentioned that I had a newfound respect for the song Seen All Good People. Because I remember before I was always saying, oh God, this song, I'm so sick of it. But when I was in audience and I noticed that when they started playing it, seeing all these tons of women and people standing up and dancing in their chairs and clapping. And I was like, wait a minute, this song has much more appeal to it than I give it original credit for. So, but this concert was great. I mean, I talked to Billy and those guys. I mean, I was supposed to go back and actually hang out with them, but Billy got to the venue really, really late and he apologized profusely after that he wasn't able to get me in back. But it was a great show. And I met a few people, a few listeners actually that night as well. So it was a great show. So this show definitely has to be in this episode because it is a fond memory of mine and one of the better Yes performances that I saw for sure.
Excellent. Yes, the Royal Affair Tour. And the poster, we've got the fantastic opportunity of Roger Dean logos for Yes and the lion on the Royal Affair Tour and Asia and John Lodge of the Moody Blues, all done in Roger Dean's amazing style. Carl Palmer and guest vocals by Arthur Brown, all that in Roger Dean's wonderful style. So yes, it's a beautiful poster and also a great event, as you say. All right then, well, let's go on to my final one before we get on to our last item this week in a rather whistle-stop tour. This time it's the Stone Free Festival that I chose. And I didn't manage to get to this, but I know that Dave Watkinson did go to this. So this is at the O2 in London in 2018. And there were 2 days of this festival. And it was Saturday the 16th of June and Sunday the 17th of June. And had I managed to go, I think I probably would have gone for Sunday rather than Saturday, because Saturday is not quite my thing, really. Scorpions with special guests Megadeth, and that's not really me.
Come on, you would have loved it.
Not really my cup of tea. On Sunday, though, yes, featuring Anderson, Raven, Wakeman, and I did very much enjoy my visit to that. I went to the Birmingham concert. I think the previous year, actually, I went. And then the special guests were Roger Hodgson, with all his links to Yes, and also Joanne Shaw Taylor. And I looked Joanne Shaw Taylor up today, and she's an amazing guitarist, very much in that blues format of guitaring, again, which I don't mind, but it's not my favourite. But she, yes, was third on the bill there. And as it says, many more bands and stages to be announced. But the other amusing thing I thought about it was, you look over the text here, and it says, introducing, so all these things, spoken word, vinyl record fair, comedy, and introducing the Stone Circle stage. And there's a little a little standing stone circle at the bottom of the illustration, and it just reminded me of Spinal Tap so much. I don't know if they did get any people of restricted height to dance around these stones, but it's just ridiculous. And I don't know what the Stone Circle stage was. I'm sure Dave does know, and so hopefully he'll let us know. But I thought that was very, very funny.
Yeah, I mean, when I looked at it, I was like, really? They had a Stone Circle? Like, it almost looked like Stonehenge, you know, this, the way it's lined up. And I can almost imagine the promoter saying, okay, each band that plays this, though, you have to play at least one, you know, tune like Fat Bottom or something. From the soundtrack there, so just so that we can keep it, you know, very 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 much to the sort of a Stonehenge theme, right? But I could imagine this being a very fantastic festival, though. I mean, I remember seeing pictures from it, and there was quite a few people at these
dates.
Even like the Yes one was very well attended, I'm actually very surprised that you didn't end up going. There must have been something really pressing to not let you go there.
Yes.
But I know, though, that you're kicking yourself, though, Kevin, that you didn't go on the 16th, because as it's mentioned here, that the Scorpions and Megadeth, it was their only UK show for 2018. So you wouldn't have been able to see Megadeth. I know how much you want to headbang to these guys. So, and I know you have their full catalog. So.
I only have one. I do have one Scorpions CD, but it isn't mine. I borrowed it from someone about 30 years ago and never returned it. So I do have one. Anyway, there you go. Good. All right. Okay. Yeah, so three each amazing pieces of ephemera from ForgottenYesterdays.com. Do go and have a look on there. Oh, and the other thing I meant to mention about the first concert that I mentioned, the Crystal Palace Bowl one, is that not only can you hear it on The Word Is Live, but you can also see some wonderful photographs on ForgottenYesterdays.com of that event. All right. So that's those. And those were very, very enjoyable to have a look at, and a really good thing to do. But I also wanted to take a few moments just today to talk about something which I've just received in the post. And there's a little story about this. Recently, I've been on a bit of a Flower Kings trip, as it were, and I've got myself an awful lot of Flower Kings albums. They're one of those prog artists that are extremely productive. Every year they seem to come out with a new album. So I've got about, 25 different albums from the Flower Kings.
Wow.
And so, you know, I would put them just below Yes in my ranking, as it were. Really great stuff. We did speak to Roy Nestolt some time ago when he did the Stolt Anderson, the Anderson Stolt album. So yes, one of my favorite bands. But anyway, that's besides the point. I had ordered another of their CDs from Discogs, and the guy that sent it to me is Dutch, and his name is John Renbake. Now, I probably just absolutely slaughtered his name, so I apologize, John. But anyway, very kindly, I don't know if he knows the podcast or knows me from online things, but he sent me an email after he sent me this Flower Kings CD. And said, "Well, I've got an unusual Yes item in my just sitting at the back of my cupboard here. Would you like it? I'll send it to you just for the price of the postage." So I said, "Well, yeah, that'd be great." And what it turns out to be, and he told me a little bit about it sort of on the email, but until I actually received it, I didn't really know what he was talking about. And it's a Roland package of standard MIDI files, and SMF is their sort of, you know, acronym for it. And it's close to the edge, obviously by Yes, but as a MIDI file. And it comes in a, again, have a look at the first graphs on the show notes for this week, but it comes in a CD case. But then I opened up the CD case to find that inside is not a CD, it's an actual floppy disk. So it's an old-fashioned, what were they, 2.4 megs or something, I can't remember now, whatever they were, disk with three files, I suppose, MIDI files on it. I don't have a cassette, so I'm not a cassette. I don't have a diskette drive anymore, or at least I think I probably do, but I'd have to really hunt for it. And so that's what it is. And MIDI files. And we've spoken about MIDI previously, but this is amazing. And I've been doing a little bit of research to see what these things actually are. And if you have a look at the photographs, you've got the music data on this floppy disk. You put it into a floppy disk drive, the little diagram, put it into a floppy disk drive in a sequencer, and then the MIDI out cable from the sequencer, back in these days, into the MIDI sound module, and then out into your amplifier and speakers. So it's awfully complicated to get to hear close to the edge through MIDI instruments. And this was in the 1990s. This came out in 1994, which is coincidentally the year I got married. So it's a long time ago, and PCs and Macs were at a very different stage in their development. But I had a little look at what this could have been played on, because I didn't really understand the whole sequencer and then MIDI sound module thing. So apparently there were these MIDI modules, and I'll come to you in a minute, Mark, because you undoubtedly will know a lot more about this than me.
Yeah, no problem.
So this little thing called a Roland SC55 was one of these sound modules, and I watched a video, again, which I'll embed into the show notes for this week, of how this works, and a walkthrough of how you use this Roland sound canvas device. And so you plug whatever your MIDI source is into the back of this little thing. It looks like it could be a small CD player, but there's no media in it. You don't put the floppy disk into this at all. And then this plays the onboard sounds, as I understand it. So it gets the MIDI information in, and the MIDI information includes what instrument you're supposed to play for this particular track. And then it uses something called sound fonts, which I'd vaguely heard of, to play these instruments. So if it's a drum kit that the MIDI says you need to play here, then it's got a selection of drum kits, presumably, in its brain, and plays those back through the speakers. And the video that I've watched, someone plugs it into his PC back from those days, so a 2004 PC, and gets the MIDI sound out of the PC into this sound module, which then plays all the background music for a game that he's playing. So there's my understanding of it. Were you involved in MIDI at this time, Mark?
MIDI is something that I didn't really get into until much later. I was always much more analog, If I need a sound like of a tambourine, I'll get a tambourine. If I need a wood block, I'll get a wood block. But MIDI is definitely very useful for that, especially nowadays when now you have such fantastic samples of stuff. MIDI, basically all MIDI is like, it just reads a bunch of different notes. Like it'll say like, you assign a note to a sound. So example, the note C will be a kick drum. C sharp could be a snare drum, a D could be a hi-hat, So there's different notation assigned to sounds. And whenever these notes come up, they play the associated sound to it. Now, the interesting thing is when you play these sorts of discs, and this brought me right back to back in the day when I saw that floppy disk there. I was like, oh boy, because I was huge into floppy disks back in the day when I was like a gaming guy and stuff like that. And what this basically does is it does kind of like those really hilarious video game versions of these songs. So basically, you would put this disc in, and you would fire up, you know, songs by Siberian Kintrusa. I'd be like, like it would do like these really weird sounds for it. Like it would do like a harpsichord for the guitar.
Yes.
Or the bass guitar would be like some, its version of a brass tuba or something like that, right? It ends up doing these really head-scratching sound versions of these songs. But the interesting thing is, on my keyboard here, I have a Yamaha EX7. Now, for you people who have Yes at the House of Blues, Igor has two of them on his keyboard rig.
Right.
And on here, I just noticed that now at the bottom, there is a floppy disk drive here at the bottom.
Oh.
Where if I was to take that disk, shove it into my keyboard here,
yeah,
it would read the disk and it would probably just play the songs, because I just have to just plug my keyboard into my mixer.
Right.
And it would play these songs off the sounds that are provided inside my keyboard. Right.
Yeah.
So it would. So there are different ways that you could activate this. You could just get yourself a separate disk drive for it and plug it into your computer, as you said. And there's various different programs now. They had a program called Guitar Pro 5, I believe it was,
right,
where it read these kinds of MIDI. And you can also put in tablature. You can print in yourself, right? And you can assign all kinds of, I would say, slightly better sounds. Like they would have a more believable drum set.
Yeah.
A more believable guitar sound, and you could have these songs played back using that. So sometimes these programs were used for like composing songs, right? And that's why they had like the MIDI available, and they had the tablature available, so that you can compose stuff. But you could also play back stuff doing that. So it's a very interesting thing that you found. I mean, I can't imagine that there's tons of these floating around somewhere.
Well, it's really odd. I mean, I've had a quick look on the internet. I can't find any other Yes albums in this format, in this MIDI format. However, I did find, again, I'll put the link in the show notes, I did find the Yes MIDI homepage. All right? So this is this is on the website, which clearly was created in the 90s. It looks like what you just what you'd expect. So it's got the Yes logo repeated many, many times in the background, you know, how websites used to be, and animated GIFs and all those sorts of things on this, and incredibly garish color scheme. And it's mad. So this is classic yes.net. It's absolutely fantastic. And every album from the first Yes up until Open Your Eyes. Oh, actually, I think more if I scroll across, because it doesn't. No, up until Open Your Eyes is available to download as a MIDI file from this website. So not only can you listen to me banging on about this on this episode, you can go to this website and download your own MIDI files of every single album that Yes have done up until Open Your Eyes, and then play it. And I did this. So I downloaded Close to the Edge, and I plugged it into a score writing program that I use called MuseScore, which is able to read MIDI files. And so I downloaded that and listened to it, and it sounds absolutely terrible. But but the nice thing is that alongside sounding terrible, it also shows you the sheet music, as it were, of Close to the Edge as it plays it. So it's absolutely fascinating. So I do encourage you listening to go and get yourself some MIDI. And I imagine, I don't know quite what other software can play MIDI files. I'm sure there are those of you out there who know that. Let us know. But yes, MuseScore, if you did want to use that to play these files, is a free download anyway. And yes, just as you're talking there, Mark, I had a look inside the sleeve of this diskette that was sent to me, and it's got all the channels. It's got a little map inside. I'll put this also up on the show notes, a little map of the different channels and what instruments they have on them. Nice. And of course, as you've just said, it depends on what MIDI brain or what MIDI software or device that you're using, how these things play back, because the MIDI doesn't include the sound itself. It just tells you what to play. It doesn't tell you, you know, it doesn't have the information on what it should sound like. That's down to the device you play it back on. So, for example, Close to the Edge, the solid Time of Change, so the beginning of Close to the Edge, features on the 16 tracks that's available, various things that you would imagine, like fingered bass, church organ, choir, ars. And that's one of the biggest drawbacks, I think, to the whole MIDI and computer music generally, is that the way it reproduces the human voice is desperately bad. Distorted guitar, synth bass one, something called star, whatever that is, slow strings, overdrive guitar, stream, strings, as you might expect, but then glockenspiel, rain, and bird, which I quite liked because of the natural sounds at the beginning of Close to the Edge, and it does its best to try and imitate those. So, yes, absolutely fascinating. My question to you listening is, have you ever seen anything else like this? A Yes MIDI file on a floppy disk. And if you have, and if you've got copies of those, then do please let us know. Put a photograph on the show notes for this week. And, yeah, we'd love to see some more Yes ephemera like we've been talking about today. Absolutely fascinating. Any final words on Yes ephemera, Mark?
Not really. I mean, the one thing, though, I'm pleased that you talked about, because it was bothering me. I was going to ask you to say, I was just imagining what MIDI sound they used for the beginning of Close to the Edge with the stream and the water and all that. Like, I can only imagine what kind of sounds they assigned to that. I mean, but by the sounds of it, you made it sound like almost that was the most properly reproduced part of the whole song, probably.
Could be. Yes. Really good fun. Thank you very much indeed, Mark, for today.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Yes Music Podcast, 600 episodes.
Just before we go, here are the names of the YMP producers and half the patrons. Producers are Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller, and Jeffrey Cresselius. Half the patrons are Jim Morrison, John Pickles, Declan Logg, Gary Betts, Alan Begg, Michael Handahan, Barry Gorski, Steve Perry, Doug Curran, Martin Kelberg, Todd Dudley, Rachel Hadaway, Lind, Paul Hales, Craig Estenis, Mark James Lang, Steve Rode, David, Bob Martellotta, John Holden, Stephen Lamb, Dem, Fred Barringer, Scott Colombo, Chris Bandini, David Hayden, and John Thompson. So, as always, very many thanks to those people who once again this month have kept YMP Towers from crumbling. If you'd like to join them to help in that endeavour financially, then please do head over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We hope to be back next week. And in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via x.com, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.